As I was telling folks, I look out the window and I'm almost convinced that I like winter, but it's only when I'm on this side of the window, so I'm not going there. Welcome to what is our sacred time. And it's made so simply by setting this hour aside each week to come and be in community, to share in the love that's here, to feel the spirit that moves among us, to hear the messages of this faith, and to be challenged by it. This morning, our focus is going to be on that star which one is called to follow. And following the light, recognizing the light, is part of how we begin every service when we light our chalice. So Wanda Null, I believe, is going to light our chalice this morning. Is Wanda, there you are, I'm so right slightly out of my peripheral vision, sorry. As Wanda lights the chalice, I'd invite all of you to join in the seasonal chalice lighting words that are printed in your order of service. Push the ring up. Candles, fire, and stars. These are the symbols of this most blessed of seasons. Candles for the banishing of darkness, fires to warm health and home, stars to beckon us, guiding our footsteps to the holiest. And now, in a time of silent reflection, prayer, or meditation, let us hold all those joys, sorrows, and concerns spoken this morning and those known only to us deep in our hearts, seeking the courage to honestly face our own challenges and the resolve to comfort, support, and assist others who are experiencing difficult times. As you know, each week, one half of our non-pledge offering that's collected in our Sunday service is given to a worthy local, national, international charity, one particularly where people in our congregation are involved in a hands-on way. And that is certainly true for the organization this month, the Corcoran Prison Outreach. And Jack Zettler is here this morning to share a little bit about that organization with you.
Good morning. Again, my name is Jack Zettler. First Parish Church has been involved in the Concord Prison Outreach Organization for many, many years. My wife and I joined the church in 1976, I think it was, and it was only a couple years after that that one of the people in our congregation buttonholed me and said, Jack, why don't you do this? And I said, oh, I don't know. I'll give it a shot. Well, that was many, many years ago. And I can speak now to the fact that having done a number of programs and met with many inmates, the effect that we can have on these inmates is incredible. They're in a position where they are not respected very much. Nobody's there to validate them or encourage them. So when we as volunteers go in and simply respect them, and we think of our first principle, you know, the worth and dignity of all persons, that's what they take away from us. But just as we give that to them, they give to us. Now today, if I counted right, I think there's about five of us that are currently volunteering in Concord. Five of us in this congregation. June McKnight, one of us also, is on the steering committee for the Concord Prison Outreach. I can point to Lisa Dubois, who I worked with many, many times in prison, and she's responsible for bringing forth a program of horticulture there. And so these are the things we bring to them. And there seems to be two broad program types. One is, let's call it educational. We can tutor math, computer science, entrepreneurship, accounting, stuff like that, which is basically training, which is very, very important because statistically, inmates that have got their GEDs and some kind of training like that are much, much more likely not to return to prison. The other type of program is one that supports them more personally, like anger management, alternative to violence program, restorative justice. These are the programs which you can't put down as training, but it is also extremely important to them because when you see that when you run these programs and you see the appreciation and the increase in their own self-respect and their change in attitude, you know you're doing something well. And you're giving yourself a real good feeling when you can do this. So I don't know what else to say about it except it is a very fitting program with FPC because it does that service, it does that honor, the worth and dignity. And it's not that hard to do, and it's just I think it's a wonderful thing to do. And I'm going to end with one little story. We sometimes think that we give them to them. Well, they give back to us, too. And I'm going to tell you one little thing that I learned, okay? I had done an anger management program years ago. And one Sunday night, my wife Carolyn and I were sitting there about 9 o'clock at night watching TV, nice and quiet, and the phone rings. And I got to tell you, I went into a bit of a rant, okay? Who the hell is calling me at 9 o'clock at night, disturbing my watching my TV, you know, can't they wait till the morning? And I'm ranting and raving around, right? And Carolyn's answering the phone. She says, it's the people from anger management. And I go, hello. So you learn both, it goes both two ways.
Thank you, Jack. It's one of Concord Prison Outreach is one of the many, the really worthy programs that our social justice initiatives here at church sponsor. I invite you now to be generous as the morning offering is taken up not only for Concord Prison Outreach, but for the very important work that the First Parish of Stowe and Acton does as well.
Thank you.
Well, this is officially the last day of the Christmas season. Next week, the decorations will be down and the Christmas story put away for another year. And then this final nod to Christmas, which we call the Epiphany, we look to the part of the story that tells us about the appearance of a star. You see, in ancient times, stars were said to foretell great events and reveal great insight. It wasn't just at the birth of this Jesus, but also the birth of Caesar and the birth of Buddha, that a new and bright star was said to have appeared in the heavens. To recognize and follow this special star is to embrace the truth and the wisdom of that prophet or that ruler or that teacher. But the star in the Bethlehem story has more significance than that. As we explored with our youth, it's sort of a navigation device, sort of like a GPS, the indispensable gadget in my life. The star is the guiding light for the journey. It doesn't change with circumstances, as the choir has sung. It's constant, steadfast. Now, literally being guided by a star was, of course, how ancient travelers who were learned in astronomy did, in fact, find their way. But I believe the star in the Christmas story represents a lot more than just an ancient navigational tool or even the marker of a great event. I think it's a symbol of the fact that we all need a guiding light in our life. That is, we all need to follow a star, individually, collectively, as a society. That's to say, we need to be guided by some strong moral values and principles, by the light of truth and conscience. And whether we as individuals and as a society choose something like a star to be our guide has very profound consequences. And I think we are seeing the significance of that played out right now in our society. Think of those beautiful words from Robert Frost that the choir sang, particularly the last four lines. When at times the mob is swayed to carry praise or blame too far, we may choose something like a star to stay our minds on and be stayed. Maybe right now the mob is swayed to carry praise or blame too far. There are those now feeling invincible with victory and others feeling desperate in defeat. And what will be their guide forward? Will it be high and lofty principles, values, and ideals, a true star, if you will? Or will it be selfish class interest, self-aggrandizement, personal enrichment, or just anything that gets you where you want to go? This week, our newly elected Congress came into session, and what was the first thing on their agenda? The insertion of a provision into an upcoming piece of legislation that would remove an independent ethics commission from the operation of the House of Representatives. Now, that group is not a partisan group. It's a group that in the House that sees that members live up to the ethical standards of elected officials and reveals to the public when they don't and informs the Congress for possible sanctions of them. But what it seems to me that the proposal was saying is that members of Congress don't want anyone to hold them to high standards. That is, it's not important to be ethical. What they're saying is we don't want to be called out when in our actions we are not following the light of the star. The star that shines with the best of principles and values and ethics. But you know, it's certainly not just a single incident where there is this troubling attitude is displayed. I don't see very many politicians at the moment being guided by the light of a star. That is, being guided by honest values, principles, high ideals. The few that clearly were, and that's on both sides of the political aisle, were the losers in the last cycle of elections. I'm afraid that I see, certainly not all, but most politicians acting based on things like special interests, self-interest, and even worse, racism, sexism, outright lies, making the deal, winning, controlling people, making money. These seem far more important than doing what is right and moral and just for most people. The basic idea is how you get there doesn't seem to matter. Don't tell the truth. Don't listen to others. Blame every problem in the world on your election opponent or the opposite party. Destroy rather than try to improve. Fire up the masses with false claims and empty promises. Deny the truth when it's presented to you. Say one thing to one group and another thing to another group. Anything to win or to hold power. Those words of Robert Frost come back to me again and again, and this time I repeat them with a little bit of emphasis added. When the mob is swayed to carry blame or praise too far, we must choose something like a star to stay our minds on and be stayed. I worry about our elected officials' unwillingness to choose something like a star as their guiding light. I feel we're drifting away from the centrality of values and ethics into sort of a reckless pragmatism and popularity as the basis for decision making. And it's not just our politicians who are doing this. If we think about it, really few of us, probably consistently anyway, heed the message to follow the values and principles we know we should. You know, I think it's so many levels, whether it's one in our personal life or in the government of our nation, we are in need of the light of that star. We need some light of truth, some light of justice and honesty and caring for those who are not powerful to start shining in. It seems to me that that light needs to come from two sources. One is internal, the other external. And both of those stars, if you will, sources of light, have a long history in liberal religion and our Unitarian Universalist theological development. 400 years ago, John Fletcher wrote these words: "The human being is his or her own star, and the soul that can render an honest and perfect person commands all light, all influence, all fate. Nothing to this person falls early or too late." There is an inner light that is constant and unwavering. It's the star of moral principles and virtues shining in us, showing us the right path. It's what we often call the still small voice, telling us how to proceed on life's journey. It's what our forebear William Ellery Channing called the likeness to God in each of us. And although we may not follow its advice, it doesn't change as our view of the world changes. It can really not be easily altered by the opinions of others. Emerson expressed the thought far more beautifully in these words. He said, "The little needle always knows the north. The bird remembereth his note. And the wise seer within me never errs. I never taught it what it teaches me. I only follow when I act aright." Yet even though our star is constant and steadfast, even though it burns with intensity, there is, as expressed in that phrase of Frost's poem, some obscurity of cloud. At times, as much as we would like to see clearly, as much as we would desire not to allow that star is taciturn. So many of the messages we receive from our society right now make it difficult to do what Frost asks of us, to stay our mind and be stayed by our star. Call it truth or reason, the voice of God, however you label it, it's extraordinarily easy to lose sight of the star that shines within each of us. Our egos get in the way of us staying on the path. Other things seem more important, and we, like our politicians, are experts at rationalizing our departures from the path that the star urges us to take. We can easily find ourselves in a position where, although still persistent, the inner light of our star has grown terribly dim. At times, the external forces of our lives are, in fact, so strong, we can easily and confidently and self-righteously, I'm talking about all of us, our politicians and others, we can embark so easily on the wrong path, even on a dangerous and destructive path, especially when the voices of the crowd are clamoring. And that observation takes me back to one of my favorite stories that I have told before, but I can't resist telling it because it seems so apt to what's going on now. In the early part of the 20th century, there was a man who graduated from the Naval Academy and worked very hard to achieve the position of captain of the largest battleship in the U.S. Navy. One stormy night, while off the northwest coast of the United States, he went up to the bridge of his ship to assure that all was well. He spotted a light approaching his ship directly ahead. He had the signalman on the ship flash to the unidentified craft, "Alter your course 10 degrees to the south." To his amazement, a response was beamed back, "I suggest you alter your course 10 degrees to the north." He immediately flashed back, "This is Captain Jones speaking, and I'm telling you to alter your course 10 degrees to the south." This time the reply came back, "I am U.S. Coast Guard Seaman Third Class Smith, and I still suggest you alter your course 10 degrees to the north." This time the captain flashed back, "I'm the captain of the largest battleship in the United States Navy, and I order you to alter your course 10 degrees to the south." The response came back, "I'm the keeper of the Puget Sound Lighthouse, and I strongly urge you alter your course 10 degrees to the north." I worry that our nation right now, in that this time, it's terribly easy for our politicians to move full steam ahead in the wrong direction, having totally lost sight of the star. But I also believe that what gets us back in touch with the inner star are the things that we claim for our external star. You know, Emerson, who I relied on earlier to suggest that the star was within each of us, as always, Emerson is never consistent. He also argues, he said that consistency is the hobgoblin of small minds, but anyway, he also argues that we each need to hitch our wagons to a star. And that implication in that statement, as well as in Frost's poem that the choir sang for you, is that self-discovery is not in and of itself enough, that we have to make ourselves part of something greater. And Frost's words again, slightly emphasized, we must choose something like a star to stay our minds on and be stayed. I believe that liberal religion can be that star for us. The things to which we as a community acknowledge as worthy of our deepest loyalty and commitment form the star that sheds light on the pathway of life, especially when your own inner flame has become hard to see. We come together each week to be reminded of the presence of the renewing light found here in community. The star of liberal religion asks us to conduct our lives with moral purpose. It asks us not to be complacent and conforming when the tide of public opinion is going the wrong way, but rather that we continue to be guided by the starlight. You know, each day, I'm sure like you, I watch the news. Everything from terrorist attack to incidents of hate to unworthy political debates that try to make the rich richer and the poor poorer, to incidents of racism as well as violence against police officers. All these and many more things are calling at me to proclaim the star. I feel called to profess the values and principles of this faith louder and clearer, maybe, than I've done before. So to those who are guided by racism and sexism and homophobia, to those who demonize people for their religion or their ethnicity, we say, no, the light from our star shines forth, proclaiming the inherent worth and dignity of every individual. To those who wish to destroy programs that help the poor and the elderly, that take away medical care, we say no. The light from our star reminds us that there must be justice, equity, and compassion in how we treat our fellow human beings. To those who say we must build walls and pass laws to exclude people from our land, we say no. Our star shines with a light of inclusion and acceptance of all. To those who say we can ignore our environment and let greed destroy our planet in the interests of businesses, we say no. The light from our star teaches us that we must care for our one planet because we are part of the interconnected web of existence. And finally, to those who say that lies and dishonesty don't really matter, that it's okay to say whatever gets you what you want, we say no. Ours is the star of truth and honesty. Well, you're probably thinking, we've traveled a long way from the Christmas story of the Star of Bethlehem that guided the shepherds and the wise men alike. But I don't really think so. You see, that star was a representation of the light that people said this teacher Jesus brought to the world. You see, it was a moral and ethical light that proclaimed love and values and principles like justice and fairness and compassion. It was a teacher who professed that you have to welcome the stranger, that you have to open your doors to everyone. A teacher that proclaimed the poor as blessed. The light from the Bethlehem star, you'll remember, proclaimed peace and goodwill to all. You know, as Unitarian Universalists, in many ways we have journeyed far from our Christian roots, but not from the light of this star. Those beams are still part of our liberal religion today, and I think they are the places where we should unite with other faiths that have similar roots to bring the light of that star more present in our world. Each week, this is the light that we rekindle in that chalice. The light of this faith is there to nurture the light within you and for you to carry from this place with you to the world. It takes some courage. Sometimes in the brightness of our busy lives, we can lose sight of the star altogether. But it is steadfast. It is there for us to choose again and again. May our New Year's resolve be to choose to better follow the star that burns in you and in me, the star that represents the light of this faith tradition. And may this year we not choose it for just ourselves, but to bring to a world so much in need of its light. I invite you to conclude these thoughts with me by raising your voices in song, hymn number 293, O Star of Truth.